language and instructions to the history and grammar. With Moses Dirks, Elliot Material Developer, National Bilingual Material Development Center. And Dr. Newt Bernstein, Professor of Finno-Ugric Languages, University of Oslo.
Center, University of Oslo, Manawajak. Unangam alok ng sa kusawasan. Professor Bergson, University of Oslo, Waya Tingin Agitako. Waya one angalak, unangam adan tunung kala ganagiko. Waya unangam tunung kala na umilayak ilakta angaktako ma. Professor Bergson, awat unangam igi machigasa na mag. Ngin unangam adan tunung kala ganagiko. Professor Brooklyn, who's gone to me, have you to the Ula? A mark of gun tenum, Norway, a softer gun, Ilagan, and Estaco, a Mazigan of a two cheat is Oko. Who's he was at one time, Kuban and now, Unaman to New Matanagan, Hasinai Dakhtala Kama, a Rachamato Unanga, King Iskandana, and Mamato Unanga Huyam Tunum, Tunoktal and Zilakta Idakhtala. Itangis niyabogam ilagan kintawa na amal agacha ngan hadagan tunok to tsirin tsirin agiko. Professor Knut Bergson.
Thank you. As you know, the written history of Alaska starts with the so-called discovery of the Aleutian Islands by Bering and Chirikov in 1741. But before that, of course, the native peoples of Alaska had a long history, probably several thousand years, but unfortunately there were no writings before the coming of the Russians, so to us the early written history of Alaska is the history of the invasion of the Russian fur traders, the so-called Promusleniki. In 1745 they had occupied the westernmost Aleutian Islands here, which they called the near islands, near to them, Blizhi Ostrova. And in less than 20 years, the Russians had occupied and made themselves masters of the whole chain, Aleutian chain, and also mainland of Alaska, right to Kodiak area, right here. The Russians also imposed a new name for those people, namely Aleut. Here we have in Russian Aleut, plural Aleuti. And that name, probably, was transferred from a Koryak village here, from the Kamchatka side. You see, they started out from Petropavlovsk here, towards the west, and then they thought at the first time that they had got somewhere on the Koryak coast. And there is a village there called Alut, in Russian Alutovskaya, here. That is probably the origin of that name. By the Russians, the name was applied to not only to what we call Aleut proper today, but also to the people of Kodiak and the whole area they eventually made themselves masters of. Whereas the natives, of course, is distinguished sharply between the Aleut proper, who call themselves Unangan, or in the Atkin dialect, Unangas, whereas the people of the Eskimos of the Pacific coast call themselves Sukhpet, real people. The border between the Eskimos and the Aleut proper, the Unangan, was about the Port Muller, like about here. These people, these languages, the Aleut language and the Eskimo language, they are entirely distinct but cognate languages, just like, for example, English and Russian. They are both come from a common stock, what we call the Indo-European proto-language, and in the same way, the Aleut and Eskimo come from some prehistoric proto-language, which one might call only Eskimo-Aleut. The Eskimos, you know, They are here at the Pacific coast and the whole coast of Alaska and through Canada and to Greenland, divided into many different dialects or even languages, whereas the Aleuts speak one language, one could say, but different dialects again. Since we can receive from the early records of the Russian seamen and also from information brought back by certain early expeditions, that when the Russians invaded Alaska, the Aleuts were divided into at least six different tribes. I'll show that on the map now, and Moses will pronounce the Aleut names for you, and as I show them. As I said first now, the border between the Eskimo and the Aleut is here on the Alaska Peninsula, which in Aleut was called... Yeah, that means the mainland, and that's from there that the word Alaska comes, the name Alaska comes. But then, now, the easternmost tribe here was the... Yeah, that's to say the men of the east. And they had the mainland then and the big island of Unimak, their territory. And then next came these. Yeah, that's the people of Akutan and the other Kranitsin Islands. And part of, eastern part of Unalaska. And then the next tribe, yeah, that's the rest of Unalaska and Umnak, possibly including also the islands of Four Mountains. We have them over here too, but they have a separate name. Yeah, but these people, you see, they were massacred by the Russian Grotov in 1764, so there are no more records about those. And these people here in this part of the chain are what we call the Eastern tribes. And then next comes, where are they now? Yeah, here. Yeah, that's the people of Atka, Amlia, and the Andrianov Islands like this, possibly including this group here, Tanaga and the Delarov Islands, but they had a separate name. Yeah, that is the Western, the people of the Western region, we could call it. Now, this is then the easternmost of the Western Aleuts, and then next comes, that is the Rat Islands, like Amchitka and Kiska and other islands, and also the Arnabuldir here, belong to that group. And then finally, in the westernmost, yeah. And that is the people then of Attu, Agattu, and the Semich Islands. And those were what the Russians called the Near Islands. Nearest to them, but farthest from the American side, of course. Well, from the place names and other few words, we know from the seamen's records and so forth, we can see that already at that time, there were certain dialectal differences, which were later can be seen more accurately from later material. I don't think I have to mention any many examples here. Just small details. Well, coming now to about 1770, the Russians, as I said, had already made themselves masters of a large part of the Aleutian Islands and parts of western Alaska. But then this area came under Russian jurisdiction, namely Kamchatka. And eventually, by 1799, you had the Russian-American Company with a legal charter and so forth. And rather importantly, in 1794, the Orthodox Russian Church started a mission. And by 1806, there was also instruction for introducing schools. But these things became only efficient, might say, by the so-called Second Charter of the Russian Company from 1821 on. At that time, the whole area was reorganized. The people were concentrated in villages, moved from their smaller places, and the whole area was divided into two districts. The eastern one, the Unalaska district, including the Pribilof Islands, which the Russians had reached already in the 1780s. The name is from Gerasim Pribilof, the captain who found that island. And then there, people were moved from Unalaska and also from the east, and these were settled. And in the same way, the western district, called the Atkin district, with the center at Atka, where it is now here, and including now the Commander Islands between Attu and Kamchatka here, there were no population there when the Russians came there, but their people were settled by the Russians partly from Attu, from that, and partly from the Atkin. And these, of course, the Commander Islands, when Alaska passed to the United States in 1867, the Commander Islands remained on the Russian side. So, now for the language. The important name here, I think, is the famous Ivan Veniaminov. He came as a missionary to Unalaska in 1824. And later on, it was in 1867, by the way, he became the Metropolitan of Moscow, and a few years ago he became a saint of the Russian Orthodox Church. And he is a real remarkable man. And his colleague in the Atkin district, there's a priest then on Atka, Yakov Netsvetov, he started his work there in 1825, when they were also built a church there. Now, Veniaminov already, just a couple of years after his arrival in Alaska, tried to translate the Catechism and also the Gospel according to St. Matthew with the help of the chief of Unalaska, Ivan Pankov. These were not published at that time, but stimulated work, stimulated Aleuts to writing, among them a man called Ivan Kurbatov, from the Bielkovsky village, it's about here. And he wrote something already in 1829, was published later by Veniaminov. Now, in his work, maybe you could take it. Veniaminov used, of course, the Russian letters, but to express certain Aleut sounds, we'll come back to those. He modified these Cyrillics, and it was the church letters he used. So this is how one of the first books looked like, the letters of... You don't have to go into those details, but that is then the Aleut Cyrillics, which were created, might say, by Ivan Veniaminov. His final religious texts, which are still known, is this one here. This was a second reprint, by the way. And also, published what they call the Elements of Christian Teaching, a primer and a sacred history and a catechism. And also, the Gospel according to St. Matthew, translated into Aleut then, with the help of various Unalaskan Aleuts. And part of this thing was published also with notes by Netsvetov. That's the same notes for the Atkin, the word different in Atkin. And Netsvetov also wrote prefaces to two of those works in Atkin. So, and these were published around 1840, you might say, written a little bit earlier. So we have then records of the language from that time in these translations. But Veniaminov also published scientific works, first, might say, a grammar and vocabulary, and that was published in 1846, but written already in 1834. And there he gives samples of the language, some native songs from Unalaska. And also in his famous work, with a very modest title, Notes on the Alaska District, is a very fine book, a fine work in three volumes, and there also he has samples of the language, and also there are samples of genuine Atkin, a couple of songs and a couple of tales. So we know something about the language at that time. Nutsvetov, by the way, probably was also the author of an anonymous Russian Atkin dictionary, probably later than Finamino's work. Now, last part of the Russian period of Alaska, the last 25 years, at that time, schools were established, Russian schools, but with Aleut books, and in several places, like Unalaska, Bielkovsky, Amli, and other places. And by the way, these schools continued also after 1867. And more translation works were done. Among them was Lavrenti Salamatov, who translated into Atkin the Gospel according to St. Mark, St. Luke, St. John, and a couple of other works. And there were more Eastern Aleut translations too, some of them published in 1902 and 1903. I think it's fair to say, even though his history hasn't been really investigated, that by 1867, when the United States bought Alaska from the Russians, most Aleuts were probably literate in Aleut. And probably many of them, at least adults, had at least some command of Russian. Now, one could ask them, the Aleuts, by 1867, having been exposed to Russian for more than a century, what would be the influence on the language? Missions started, as I said, already before 1800, but didn't become efficient before Venimino's time, but still these some 50 years. In the preface of his grammar, written in 1834, Venimino said that older Aleuts told him that the language had changed, but they were unable to specify the changes. Venimino himself pointed out two areas of Russian influence. First, the coining of religious terms, and second, the direct use of Russian words, that's to say, loan words. Just a few examples here. There were, like here, the word for God, for instance, Agubo, was already in the language, meaning there something like maker or creator or something, like it was an Aleut god, of course. But then this word could be taken over directly. But then there was also terms coined in Aleut, like Kamlatuku, for the priest. That means, literally, chief of prayer, or Kamlak, really, was early feast. I mean, of course, a Aleut native feast, but that come to mean a religious ceremony and also prayer, and then from there on, because it's Kamlatuku. And then, by the way, also ordinary words like Tomadurusa, meaning settlement, that also changed the meaning, of course, to village when the Russians had the people concentrated in these different villages. Among them, I mean, the big village in Unalaska and the village on Unak and Atka village and so on. But they were also taking over Russian words then. Just a little example here. A term for things which the Russians brought, like tobacco, in Russian tabak, and that became in Aleut tamaka or tapmaka, dialectal difference there. This was a term, I'd say, which the Aleuts didn't have beforehand. But also Russian words were introduced for things for which there were Aleut names. For instance, this svolovik in Russian futil, and in Aleut then pitili, even though in Aleut there is a word hinner, meaning weak. And another example, a final example here, for brother, Russian brat, who was taken over into Aleut as brata, even though in Aleut You have already Luda, his elder brother, King Yi, his younger brother, and Huyu, her brother. A distinction not found in Russian. We can say now that, yeah, and these, by the way, these words also illustrate the fact how the phonology of Aleut was affected. In originally, there was no P, B, or P, F, and V in Aleut, and they were rendered like in the word for tobacco by nasals, by M, or the aspirated M. But later on, the Russian words were adopted with the Russian sounds. In that way, P, B, etc. came into the Aleut language. And there are lots of words now with those letters, loan words from Russian. If this is plain and easy to understand also. But then the question comes up whether also the syntax of a language, the way of putting things, that was also influenced by Russian. And that is possible that, of course, talking about different things from before, like this religious teaching, then we have to put things differently. But so far as one can judge from the samples of the like the native songs and early stories, I think it's rather improbable that the language itself, I mean the way of putting things, was deeply influenced by Russian. That would show up otherwise, I should think. And it's improbable that those songs recorded in the 1830s, perhaps, that they should already be heavily influenced by Russian. So this was, might say, the language was only superficially influenced by Russian, perhaps. Well, and we pass now to the American period. Starts in 1867, of course. Important thing is, I guess, to say that in the first decades didn't happen very much. In 1871, an English school was opened on the Pribilof Islands and Paul and St. George, and run by the Alaska Commercial Company. But according to an unpublished study by Alice Taff, the school had little success until about 1890. By that time, there were no other schools for natives in Alaska, I think. And the first federal school under the Bureau of Education of the Department of the Interior started in 1912. About the same time, the Russian schools run by the Orthodox Church were closed. So until then, the schooling of the Aleuts was this, their school was the Russian Orthodox school. And at that time, I think, it's fair to say, there was no official concern for native languages. As for the research in Aleut, the thing, it was the Russian ethnologist Valdemar Jochelsen, who in 1909 and 1910 went to the expedition to the Aleutian Islands. He was doing work in archaeology, ethnology, and also linguistics, where he had the help of two important Aleuts, the chief of Unalaska, Alexei Yachmenev, and the priest, assistant priest of Unalaska, Leon Tsivtsev. And it was helped by other people too, of course. And he recorded a big collection of folkloristic texts and vocabulary, and also grammatical notes, among them a critical analysis of Veniamino's work, which was the pioneer work, but of course insufficient. He got to publish only part of this thing, but most of the material is extant in the United States in the New York Public Library. If we compare now this material recorded around 1910 with the earlier material, one can say, I think, that the general nature of the language was about the same as at Veniamino's time. Certain minor changes have been going on in Eastern Aleut. For instance, the initial H aspiration was lost by Jochelson's time. It's retained, by the way, in Atkin and also in Atun, but the small changes. But another interesting thing is that certain dialectal features of the East were coming westwards. According to Veniamino, at Umnak, the plural of nouns was an S, whereas in Alaskan in N. The S is still used at Atka, but this N is then Eastern thing. But in Jochelson's material from Umnak, is only the N, so that the Eastern N has moved and replaced the Western S there at Umnak. The explanation for that might be possibly two kinds. Namely, on the one hand, possible question of intermarriage, but also possibly the prestige of the church language. Since by that time, in 1910, the written Aleut in the Russian Cyrillics was known by all adults and had and was used in the churches, of course. The English school system, which started then in 1912, that went on to 1931, when the school was transferred to the Office of Indian Affairs. At that time, according to certain studies, the school was rather inefficient, but in the early 30s, it seems that was a kind of like this change of attitude, possibly connected with a New Deal. And without going into details here too much, one could say that the Aleut illiteracy was continued, but also the teachers become more interested. And it's fair to mention the name of J. Ellis Ransom, who was a teacher at Umnak from 1936. And his interest in language probably stimulated a well-known figure, Femigan Ermolov, Aleut of Umnak, to do a writing of his own. And there is also other writings by Aleuts. A little bit later, may mention also John Harrington, who worked with Alexander Gromov of Unalaska, and also with the St. Paul chief, John Yachmanov, the son of Jochelson's helper, Alexei Yachmanov. There were other things done at that time, but approaching now the present time, the big event is, of course, the Japanese attack in 1942, when the people of Attu, they were taken prisoner to Japan, as you know, whereas the Afghans and all the Eastern Aleuts were evacuated to Southeast Alaska. There, they got in close contact with speakers of English, including Tlingit Indians. And on the other hand, many of the older people died. And that meant, of course, a weakening of the traditions. After the war, in 1945, the people were brought back. The Atuans from Japan, then they were put together with the Atkins on Atka. Shortly after war, Gordon Marsh, now a priest monk in Inukenti, did the research work on Aleut, and he worked with Ermolov, Umnak, and other people. That was around 1950 and a little bit later. And at the same time, I had the opportunity to visit Atka, where I worked with William Dirks Sr., Moses' grandfather, and Cedar Snigarov, and also younger people. If I may just briefly tell, kind of superficially, I guess, about the situation there at Atka at the early 1950s. The village was about 100 people, Aleuts, all Aleuts except the teacher's family. the everyday language was Aleut, and people had a varying command of English. Younger people were fluent English, older one maybe less fluent, and so on. At school, all instruction in English, the teachers no knowledge of Aleut at all. The Atuan was still spoken by the Atuans, but there was a beginning assimilation to the rest of the people. And the Atkin was more or less influenced by Eastern Aleut, since there were some Eastern Aleut families there, and was intermarried and so on. This all means, I guess, that the norms were shaken. I mean, the linguistic norms were shaken. And there was an English influence on the younger speakers too. But still, the everyday language, so far as I could see or hear or know, was Aleut. In 1971, I had the chance to come back after 20 years then. Then the situation had changed very much. In the first place, of course, some of the old people were dead, and it was a new generation. And also, the working conditions were changed. Formerly, in the summer, the people went to the Pribilof Islands to slaughter seals. But now, most, I guess, were occupied with commercial fishing within English-speaking environment. And also the effect of the school probably must have been there, at least as a prestige effect, since obviously English had become to a certain extent a home language now, because the preschool children who had never been out of the village had all at least some command of English. And this showed that also in mixed speech. Let me mention just one thing. The English numerals had replaced the Aleut ones right down to about five. And the children there I spoke to, they couldn't count in Aleut to more than four or five. Some even just to three. And the higher numerals used in English, even though Aleut has simple numeral system, and go as far as you know, as you want. That was in 1971. The teacher, he let me experiment a little bit in the school. I wrote off some of the text I had got, and then had them read, and there were great interest for that. And they were also very interested in numerals and things like that. That's so much for the school. In the church, there was a Russian use of Russian and English now, rather than Aleut. And I guess it's fair to say that the knowledge of the Cyrillics, the old Cyrillics, was reduced to a couple of persons. In other words, the Aleut literacy had almost gone. In the East, at that time, the older people, older people still could read Aleut, and it's fair to mention also the name of the late Anfisia Shapsnikov, who was making religious translations into Aleut, and recorded place names and so on, and she had a command, first of course, over mother tongue Aleut, and then Russian and English. But there, as in Alaska, the Aleuts are in the minority, and there is much closer contact with speakers of English, and the younger generation is largely anglicized. According to an inquiry in March 1971, from the school teachers told Dr. Krauss of the University of Alaska that the speakers of Aleut, just to generalize now, they were from about 30 and older, whereas the younger people could understand perhaps some Aleut but didn't speak it. If you're from 30 years back from 1971, then you come to the time of the evacuation. So the people who are born before the evacuation still spoke some Aleut, whereas the other ones did not. This has to be studied much more closely, of course, before making these generalizations. So that was the second period of the modern history of Aleut language. The first period starting with the Russian invasion, and the second period starting with the purchase of Alaska by the United States. And then the third period, might be, we could say, starts with the law of June 1972, according to which the bilingual program was instituted. May I read just two sentences from that Senate bill leading to the law? Establishment of a bilingual program of education for native Alaskans will encourage the development of educational materials relevant to native history, legends, folklore, artistic expression, and characteristic lifestyles by recognizing that the local culture is a legitimate source of study and interest. An estate-operated school which is attended by at least 15 pupils whose primary language is other than English shall have at least one teacher who is fluent in the native language of the area where the school is located. Written and other educational materials, when language is a factor, shall be presented in the language native to the area. At the same time, by the same law, the Alaska Native Language Center of the University of Alaska was created. This was something very new and meant very much, of course, for these different peoples. So then, in August 1972, the village of Atka was offered a bilingual program. May I mention that because I had been there 20 years earlier, had got some material from the people, I could be of some assistance, so I were in there from the beginning. And then the people of Atka, they were asked whether I would have the program and whether they would have any help from me, and they wanted that, so I helped them designing a orthography. But that's to say, it was done in the way that I tried to explain what were the choices. There were first a question of Roman orthography and the Cyrillics, and people would very much like to take up again the Cyrillics, but also the Roman came in then, and there were certain choices to be made, and I tried to explain what they were so that the people could then choose for themselves, and that's the way this orthography came about. And essentially, the Roman orthography is a transliteration of the old Aleut Cyrillics. And then was a and then the teachers' aides were chosen, Nadia Staguli and Moses Dirks here, and there was a first literacy courses, first in Fairbanks for the week, I guess, both of you went there, and then Moses came to me in Oslo in for 3 weeks in 72. The next year, 73, the teaching already started. Teaching of Aleut in the school of Atka, that's to say. And in the summer, we had a workshop there at Atka. It was Nadia Staguli, Moses Dirks, and Sally Snigaroff, and I was a consultant then. And then we tried to produce some reading material, and then the language could be put to different types of uses. We made a primer, and there were made tape recordings of all the people, and which we tried to write down, and so on. And then Nadiesta made a little booklet on description of plants, and Moses on the fishes, and Moses also translated a geological sketch of a geological history of Atka, written there by Bruce Marsh, who was out there studying volcanic activity. And let me also say that, of course, the question of linguistic norm, that's to say, to choose the right school language, that was a great problem. But this was put before the village, both at the beginning of this workshop, and it was agreed that we should try to keep the school language acceptable to parents. That's to say, a little bit old-type language rather than the very youngest people's speech. And then in the middle of the work, we also showed some of the results, so the people had followed this development. I tried to stress this thing, since I think it's important, also because, of course, I didn't want to, being a not only non-Aleut, but even an alien, should I come out there teach Aleut. That was not the case at all. but the people could choose for themselves, and the whole thing was produced in that workshop by our friends. And later on, Moses will show you some of these samples of this work, and he will also explain the later development. But before I end, I'd like to say also that in 1974, there was an Eastern Aleut workshop at St. Paul, arranged by the Alaska State Operator School System, the Alaska Native Language Center, Fairbanks, and the Aleut League. And there were representatives there from most eastern villages, and also from Atka. In the same year and the next year, material for Unalaska City School was developed by Ismail Gromov and Ray Hudson. And in 75, also materials for Eastern Aleut were produced for the Alaska State Operator School System by Olga Mensov of Akutan and Ilyodor Filimonov, originally from St. George. Now, in the fall of 1976, the Alaska Native Language Center and the Division of Rural Educational Affairs of the University of Alaska made it possible for Moses Dirks to spend 3 months with me in Oslo for linguistic training, to be in a better position for producing reading materials and so forth, which he will be telling about himself. By then, the regions had become independent districts, and the National Bilingual Materials Development Center came into being from April 1977, I guess. And about this, the center's director, Tupo Pulo, will tell you herself.